of Hope podcast. Conversations, stories, advice from the autism community for the autism community.
Welcome back, everyone, to this week's episode of Peace of Hope podcast. We are actually live in Florida, and we are here with Emily Hall. We just attended a workshop for Sib Shops, and she is, the director of the Sibling Support Project. Yes, perfect. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me to participate in your podcast, first of all. And thanks for attending the training.
We loved it.
Yeah, it was fun 2 days. And we're always excited when new folks want to become facilitators of Sib Shops. So thank you for attending. And expanding Sib Shops for families in your area. That's always exciting.
We're coming to Kennesaw Sib Shops, everyone.
Hooray! So I'm the director of the Sibling Support Project. We are the first national organization dedicated to supporting brothers and sisters of people with special developmental health and mental health concerns. And we're located in the Seattle area. We are a proud program of Kindering, which is Washington State's largest early intervention provider. And we work with siblings in a number of ways. We have books and publications for brothers and sisters. They are written for and largely by siblings.
That's wonderful.
Of all ages, yes. We have books for kids, books for teens, and books for adults. We facilitate online communities for siblings, for brothers and sisters. So we have SibTeen for adolescent siblings, and we have Sib20 for brothers and sisters in their 20s.
And this is all on Facebook?
This is all on Facebook. And then finally, we have SibNet for adult siblings. And that's all one word, S-I-B, capital N-E-T. And that's, as I said, for adult siblings. That group has been around for as long as the internet, honestly.
It started
out as a listserv, and then it was a Yahoo group, and now it lives on Facebook. And so they're all closed groups just for brothers and sisters of people with disabilities. They're really warm, reflective, very supportive groups where brothers and sisters can go to connect with each other and to get information and support.
So families just go, well, siblings go, and they put it in the search bar and they find it. Is it a closed group?
Yep, we ask 3 questions. They're not hard questions, but we do ask people to respond. We do need answers to those questions to be able to add someone to the group.
Perfect.
And we would love to welcome new members, so.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And then there's different state chapters as well, correct?
And then, well, that is the Sibling Leadership Network. That is a different organization. It's a separate organization from the Sibling Support Project. They work mostly in the areas of research, policy and advocacy, and then services and supports. And they're really working to make sure that adult siblings have opportunities to connect for information and support, but that also siblings are considered in those areas of research and policy. So that any kind of policy that impacts people with disabilities, we're thinking about siblings too.
That's wonderful. That's definitely an underserved community.
Yeah, and they're kind of a sister organization to the Sibling Support Project. That's the Sibling Leadership Network. Their website is siblingleadership.org, and people can go to the website and see if there's a chapter in their state. If there isn't, we are always welcoming new people to start chapters in their states so that adult siblings can connect with each other.
How many states have chapters?
You know, I think it's up to 27 now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. I said 24 in our training yesterday, and then I went and looked, and I think it's up to 27 now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And then the other way that the Sibling Support Project works to support brothers and sisters is probably what we're best known for, which is our Sib Shops. Our founder, Don Meyer, was the director of the Sibling Support Project for almost 30 years, and he really is considered by many people as the father of the sibling movement. He started, he created the Sib Shop model. He started in 1982 as a graduate student of special education at the University of Washington. And he started to think about how a diagnosis or a disability impacts different members of the family and siblings in particular. And that's why he created the Sib Shop model, to make sure that young brothers and sisters have a chance to meet each other, to talk about the good and the not so good parts about having a sibling with a disability, and then also to have a chance to just be kids and have pedal to the metal fun with each other.
So for those listening that don't know what a Sib Shop is, what is that going to look like for their child?
So, you know, it's going to look a little bit different depending on which organization is offering the Sib Shop. There are Sib Shops in just about every state across the country, and people can come to our website to see where there are Sib Shops in their state. You can search that by state. And so the days of the week that it's offered, the times of day might vary from organization to organization. But the common ground is really that idea of letting young brothers and sisters meet each other, do really, really fun activities together, recreational activities, but then also have some discussion activities so they can explore the topics related to what is it like to have a sibling with a disability. So I know growing up for me, I'm a sibling. That's probably my best qualification for this job. I have a background in the disability field and in social work. But I know that growing up as a sibling, I had never met another person who had a brother or sister with a disability. And so that caused for me a lot of feelings of isolation. And so I would have loved to have had a Sib Shop where I could go and meet other kids who had brothers and sisters with disabilities and who would really kind of understand the things that I was going through because they were going through them too. Mm-hmm. So the Sib Shop will look a little bit different. It's probably going to be between 2 to 4 hours, maybe on a Friday, a Saturday, or a Sunday. The kids are going to come and do really fun activities and then also, as I mentioned, some discussion activities and probably eat some super healthy kid food, hopefully, and just have a good time.
And so I know we talked about this in the training a little bit. It's not therapy. It's a recreational activity. You're making sure that's clear for families.
Yes. Yes. Sib Shops are celebrations of the many contributions of brothers and sisters to their families. We emphasize a wellness approach. This is not, it's not a pity party. It is not therapy, group or otherwise. I think that after experiencing the Sib Shop today, you would agree that there are probably some therapeutic elements.
Definitely.
For the kids and also for the adults, honestly, who participate. It's just plain fun, which is good for the soul. But they are certainly not, they're not clinical, they're not therapy, they're not traditional support groups the way we think of support groups. They really are opportunities for information and support in a highly recreational setting. So the emphasis is really on fun.
What would you say to that parent that says, you know, the sibling's fine, I don't need to worry about the sibling, they're doing great?
Well, I always joke, well, those are the ones you need to worry about the most, you know, just based on my own experience, based on what we know from the research, and then based on what we know from working with siblings for almost 40 years now, since the beginning of Sib Shops and the Sibling Support Project. And we know that siblings experience many of the same issues that parents experience, yet have many fewer opportunities for information and support. So if you think about how do parents get information about their child's diagnosis, right? They have access to clinicians and doctors and professionals. If kids are lucky, if siblings are lucky, they're getting information from their parents. And we know from the research that that's one of the major ways that the sibling experience parallels the parent experience is that need for information. So a name for what my brother or sister has. What does that mean? How is that connected to his or her behavior that I see every day? How is that connected to the routines I see every day? The therapists that are coming in and out of the house or the appointments that we're driving to every week? How is that all connected to my sibling's disability? And so it's really important for kids to have that kind of information to answer questions for themselves, but also to answer questions from peers who don't always ask those questions in the nicest ways. And so I would say to parents, to recognize that their children are experiencing some of these very same issues that they as parents are experiencing because a disability impacts an entire family, right? We are all living with this diagnosis together, and it's going to maybe impact us in slightly different ways. And we're all going to have certain strengths that we bring to the table, and we're all going to have certain needs, right? I mean, how can something so important in the life of a family impact just one or two people, right? We're all sharing that experience. So I would say to parents, think about the benefits you've gotten from connecting with other parents who have kids with disabilities. Think about the opportunities that you've had to receive information and a different understanding of your child's strengths and needs and how do we meet those needs as a team. right? The sibling needs to be part of that team as well because it's their reality too.
You know, I had never really thought about that aspect, even before we came to the training. You were talking about using, you know, age-appropriate language about how I hear parents all the time, they're trying to protect their kid.
Yes.
They're trying to protect the sibling. They don't want to interrupt their lives. But the matter of the fact is that it is their life.
Absolutely.
It's part of their daily, you know, routine now, and not understanding. I think one of the things you said was if you don't tell them, the parents don't tell them what's going on, they're going to make something up on their own.
Yes.
And try to figure it out.
Yes. When kids don't have information about something and they're being pressured by their peers to answer questions, naturally, they're going to make things up, or
right.
they're going to piece it, you know, not with any bad intention, but maybe just to kind of try to make sense of it themselves. And so it's really important. And we know, you know, sadly, sometimes the answers that kids come up with, sometimes they blame themselves for their sibling's disability. They think they might have caused it somehow. You know, we want them to have correct information so they don't carry around that guilt. And so that they have a clear way of explaining it to friends who ask questions.
Are there any resources for parents to learn how to talk to their child, to talk to the sibling about the diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so we have a couple of papers that are available on our website, siblingsupport.org, that can help parents certainly understand some of the issues that young sibs face and suggest ways to talk with them. I always think it's great when professionals are part of that picture and when professionals are willing to spend 10 minutes with a sibling to talk about, well, what does autism mean? We urge organizations that support families, support people with disabilities and families, to have sections on their website for young readers so that kids can understand, have a better understanding of disability and services that are available in language that kind of makes sense to them. So, yeah.
That's something we hadn't thought about either, about adding that onto our website. So we're going to have to do that when we get back.
Yeah. I mean, not just for siblings, but in general for kids in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are writing papers for school all the time. And, you know, increased understanding can only help all of us, really.
Definitely.
Right? And help us break down some of those stigmas about disability.
Excellent. Is there anything else that you'd like people to know about Sib Shops, about siblings in general?
Yeah, I think, I think siblings share unique relationships with their brothers and sisters and know their brothers and sisters in ways that parents might not. And that's in any family. That's disability or none. And I think that siblings really bring a lot of value to the table, knowing their brothers and sisters as they do, loving their brothers and sisters as they do, and really wanting what's best for them. I think that they bring a tremendous value to the picture. I think it's really important to remember that they also have needs. And I think the good news for parents, we get a lot of inquiries from parents who contact us, and they'll say something like, you know, my 10-year-old son is diagnosed with autism and his 8-year-old sister does not have a diagnosis, and I'm starting to think that maybe his diagnosis is impacting her somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, yes, I think you might be onto something. Let's talk about that. Because parents don't always know exactly how it's impacting the other child. And so I always invite the parent to maybe open the door by starting to ask some questions to start that conversation. But I think it's important to leave that door open for conversation and to let the sibling know that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to express feelings that might not always be 100% positive. I think a lot of siblings are really focused on not adding burden to their parents who are dealing with so much with their child with the diagnosis. Siblings, in many cases, try not to add to that burden and are sometimes afraid to maybe share things that are not 100% positive. But certainly they need an outlet for that. And so parents, I think the good news is a little goes a long way. Even just, you know, 15 minutes a day or a
right.
week, you know, we had a sibling on the panel yesterday who said that the time that she had with her mom after she put her sister to bed, it was late at night. She said, I was a little kid. I shouldn't have been up so late, but any lost sleep I had was more than compensated for in the relationship building I did with my mom, you know? And so,
just
and this was
that one-on-one attention,
a few minutes a night
when it's about them, not about the sibling with the
correct,
disability.
Correct. And she said, sometimes we would talk about nothing, and sometimes we would talk about everything. And we're really talking about just a few minutes a day, not hours and hours. And so I think that's hopefully, hopeful for parents, mm-hmm. That it's not, because none of us has enough time in the day. So I think it's good to remember a little goes a long way.
So how often will children and siblings attend these SIP shops?
So the training or the SIP shop itself?
The SIP shop itself.
So again, it really depends. A lot of organizations offer them every other month, or they might offer them monthly. We invite you to come to our website, siblingsupport.org, and you can search for a SIP shop in your area and then contact that SIP shop directly and find out what their scheduling looks like.
And what if a child goes to a SIP shop and it's just not for them? Do they have to keep coming?
Absolutely not. SIP shops are not school. They're not, we don't obligate kids to come to SIP shops. That's not to say that you might not need to gently persuade a child to come to the first one if they're a little apprehensive, what is this all about? But as facilitators, we take our roles very seriously as being the people who are really responsible for making SIP shops so rewarding on so many levels that kids will be eager to come back every time. And we try to do that from the second they step foot through the door. And as you saw today, some of them don't want to leave, and some of them we're already asking, when is the next SIP shop? So that's always a great sign.
I thought it was really just beautiful today that there were children that came in the beginning and they were really quiet and they were really shy, but by the end of it, they were raising their hand, they were participating, and then, like you said, they're like, when's the next SIP shop? Yeah. And they're excited to come back.
It was great. But to answer your original question, it's not going to be the fit for everyone, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's important, I think, to check in with the child after they've attended maybe one or two or three SIP shops, and by the third one they're still really not that into it, to maybe have that conversation. Is this something that you enjoy doing? You don't have to come to this. We can talk to your parents about you not coming anymore if you really don't like it. So, and sometimes the kids will say, oh, no, I really like it. And, it's just they're not communicating that in a way that's easy to see. So, and sometimes they'll say, yeah, I really think that it's not the best fit for me. And that's okay, too.
What about professionals that are listening that are interested in becoming facilitators? Can you tell them how to do that?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. So we have these things called our SIP shop standards of practice. They are our best practices. There are a lot of, we don't have the only sibling support model, SIP shops, but we're glad that there are so many SIP shops across the country and now in about 10 countries around the world. And so in order to be a SIP shop, we ask that you uphold our standards of practice. Those are kind of our best practices that make a SIP shop a SIP shop. And according to those standards of practice, we require that at least one person who's part of your facilitation team has attended our two-day training and been certified by us as a first-generation SIP shop facilitator. And that's really to make sure that parents sending their kids to a program called a SIP shop are sending them to a program that is firmly grounded in our model, our values, our mission, and our goals. So that would be the first step, is to attend a training. All of our upcoming trainings are posted on our website, siblingsupport.org, on that front page under upcoming events. We're adding new trainings all the time, depending on where there's a request or a demand for it. So if you don't see one in your area and you think that your organization might be interested in hosting or co-hosting a training, I'm always happy to talk with people about what that would entail in terms of logistics and cost and space requirements and all of that. So people can certainly just email me. My email is on the website, and I would be happy to chat with them.
Excellent. Yeah. Can you tell people what kind of the two-day training looks like? We had a blast, guys. I'd highly recommend it.
Great, thank you. The two-day training is typically on a Friday and a Saturday. The first day is really kind of to build a foundational knowledge of siblings and sibling issues. So we do I never like to use the word lecture because it's much more interactive than that, I think. But we do a presentation in the morning about siblings' unique concerns and unique opportunities. After lunch, we have the highlight of the day, which is we get to hear from a panel of adult siblings who share their experiences. And at the end of the day, we start to talk about the SIP shop model. And then the highlight of day two is our demonstration SIP shop, which you guys have just finished.
Yep. And make sure you wear your tennis shoes.
Yes. Yes, the dress code is always aggressively comfortable, aggressively casual for that, because we do a lot of fun physical activities together. I don't know who has more fun at those events, if it's the kids or the trainees. I think pretty much.
I think we might have won today.
I think we had a lot of smiles in the room, so that was really great. So it's a 2-day training, and I really think that having that foundational knowledge followed by the experience of an actual SIB shop with kids is really what makes it such a powerful experience for a lot of people.
And so once you gain the certification, do you have to renew it every year?
Nope. So as of right now, we do not require you to renew your certification. You take your certification with you. So if you work at multiple agencies or change jobs or whatnot, you can bring your certification with you. We do have people who were trained maybe several years ago, and they either haven't facilitated a SIB shop in a long time, or they just want kind of a refresher. So they do come back to trainings sometimes. Like one of the people here at this organization had done the training 22 years ago, and she was back for this one. So we always like that when people take it upon themselves to freshen their skills and make sure that they are still doing work that's aligned with our model and our mission, but we don't require that.
Have you seen SIB shop attendees become SIB shop facilitators?
We have indeed, and we always love that. Because we, first of all, think that adult siblings make some of the best facilitators. And for folks listening, if you are an adult sibling and there's a SIB shop near you, it would be wonderful for you to maybe offer your services as a volunteer, because I think you'll get a lot out of it. And I know the kids always get so much out of having facilitators who are siblings, who are kind of adult versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Role model.
And role models. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's really nice.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to us about everything. Yeah, we have been blown away by SIB shops. We're really excited to offer it at our facility.
Great. Yeah, I can't wait to hear all about the great work you guys are going to do with siblings. Yeah, it's going to be great. So, and thanks for taking the time to come to the training and to interview me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to A Piece of Hope podcast. To learn more about Piece of Hope or to donate to a Piece of Hope scholarship fund, visit appleseedsaba.com/Piece of Hope. Join us next week for more stories, conversations, and advice from the autism community for the autism community.